Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show. Matt Catrillo here with you on a hump day, and Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, lots of pre-owned inventory, a great selection of pre-owned inventory, that is. And a great service department that just gets the job done with whatever you need for your current vehicle. And the sales staff is not just there for the sale when you're looking for your next vehicle. They're there to make sure that you get the right vehicle at the right price that's right for you and your family. And it's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Over on Eagle 107 right now, Phillies and the Mets finishing up their three-game series today with a matinee at Citizens Bank Park. Phillies started the game with a golden opportunity. Max Scherzer's on the mound for the Mets today. And he walked the first three batters. Phillies had the bases loaded with one out, got nothing. And that's played a big factor in the game since. The Mets now lead 4-1, top of the fifth. They got a run in the third from a Nemo homer. Pete Alonso was doubled in this game. Actually, he's got two RBI doubles in this game. Mets currently have the bases loaded with two outs in the top of the fifth. 4-1 lead as they try to get the season series or the series win there. Other scores around Major League Baseball at this point: Nats over the Braves 3-1. Pirates lead the Cubs 6-2. Okay. Pirates 1-3 on the year. Let's see what the Pirates. Ke'Bryan Hayes has singled. Gamble has homered. Newman has tripled. Okay. So 6-2 Pirates. Guardians lead the Reds 6-1. The Red Sox lead the Tigers 7-2. 6-0 Dodgers over the Twins. Those are the look around the MLB as of right now. And in college football, really not a huge shocker here, as the winding collegiate career of quarterback JT Daniels has turned on to a country road, so says Pete Thamel of ESPN, as he is now heading to West Virginia following his stints at USC and, of course, at Georgia. Was 7-0 as a starter the past two seasons at Georgia, but now he's heading to the Big 12 and heading to West Virginia. So it keeps going. The beat keeps going on for JT Daniels as he finishes off his career in college football. Now, there's also a memorial service that has been planned for Dwayne Haskins. It'll be held next Friday in Pittsburgh. His wife came out with a very heartwarming statement today. So that'll be next Friday, and obviously had a lot of people to thank and for all the prayers and support and all that stuff. So yeah, that's gonna be next Friday. Still kind of learning the details from what happened there with Dwayne Haskins last week in South Florida. And also in college basketball, you have Armando Bacot returning for his senior season, which is huge for UNC, knowing the kind of role that he played in UNC's run to the championship game this year. And that, of course, will put him in the discussion for the preseason winning award honors. No doubt about that. So we had a couple different things happening today. Also in the NFL, you had the Raiders agreeing to a three-year, $121.5 million extension with Derek Carr. And the deal also includes a no-trade clause. Keeps Carr under contract through the 2025 season. Base salary is just under $20 million for next year.
See, I mean, there's an organization that wants to pay their people, as opposed to others that just want to rip off the athlete.
Well, I will say this, Mr. Steve Jones. Alec Bohm got a nice reception.
Oh, that's
yes, last night.
That was last. Oh, come on, last night. Come on. They'll boo the heck out of him in a week. I mean, come on.
He got a nice reception last night. Yeah. The fans saw that he was heartfelt. It was a mistake. It was an in-the-moment type thing.
Blah, blah,
and they say,
blah,
hey,
blah,
we love you, man. It's
blah,
okay.
Blah, blah,
things
blah,
happen.
Absolutely, until he makes the next mistake. All right, so we know how that group operates. Oh, my goodness. We love you. Don't ever do it again. Which part? The part where he talked or the part where he made the throwing error? The throwing error. He'll make another throwing error at some point, and they'll go after him. Oh, can't believe it. Yeah, it's just, and you know I'm speaking the truth here. The difference between you and me is I actually do tell the truth. Man, you're in some fantasy world.
No, señor! No, señor! No, señor!
I mean, how about that tweet that was put out about your guy Embiid? He has more 40-10 games than anybody in the history of the NBA. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually not true. He's 14th all-time. Okay. He's 14th. I feel like I ruin your day with facts.
There's still something wrong if he doesn't win the MVP, regardless of where he is in that list.
Well, it's interesting. I was talking to my class about this today. We were talking about analytics. And I thought that Scott Fransky made one of the better statements about it when he was on the show last week. So I talked about Scott's statement on the show where he said, look, it's a radio broadcast and TV has exponentially more time because you can see the game to go through some of the analytics. And if you watch Sunday Night Baseball, ESPN kept putting up one graph and one chart after another based on analytics. Now, it may appeal to a younger fan. It had no appeal to me. I was like, get that junk off the screen. But part of it is I've watched so much sports in my lifetime, I don't need a math formula to figure out what I'm watching. To me, a lot of this stuff is for people who don't know sports. That's me. And I was talking to my class today about worthwhile analytics. And I pointed out what Scott said on a radio broadcast, I know at the time, but then Scott made what I thought was the ultimate point. If you had to explain it, it's not worth doing. If you have to explain it, it's for example, when you tell a joke, and I tell the suit this all the time, when you have to tell a joke and have to explain the joke, that's not good. Suit still hasn't gotten the point on that one yet. But that's
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells FOUDA!
By the way, I was at Spikes Fest on Saturday. And a Spikes fan came up to me and he said that he, on ESPN Plus, is it Plus or is it ESPN 3? that he deliberately will watch Bucknell basketball. He said, and he didn't know Doug by name. He said, I love the bingo guy. I love the bingo guy. So that's Doug Bird's song. I said, Doug's great.
Bingo!
Right? He said, I love the bingo guy. I said, yep. That's Doug. I said, you should love him. I said, he's awesome. But Scott made the point. If you have to explain it. So let's take one that's common. And again, this is all part of the conversation I had with my class today. We hear the term, the word war all the time, wins above replacement in baseball. Can you define it? Can you define it? What does it, how do you come to the number that you're the number one in wins above replacement? Can you explain it? Right? You hear it all the time. And I'm not going to ask Matt to explain it because Matt does not talk about this. And so it's not like Matt's into this at all. But how do you arrive at it? So they're talking about your total value. They're calculated from the number and success rate of on-field actions by a player in batting, base running, fielding, and pitching. No clearly established formula exists for WAR. Sources that provide this statistic calculate it differently. These include Baseball Prospectus, Baseball Reference, and Fan Graphs. All these sources publish the method they use to calculate WAR, and all use similar basic principles to do so. Baseball Reference uses six components to calculate WAR for position players. The components are batting runs, base running runs, runs added or lost due to grounding into double plays, or in those situations, fielding runs, potential adjustment runs, and replacement level runs based on playing time. The factors are there compared to the league average. So a value of zero represents an above average player. Okay, here's a number for you. Two. You know what two happens to be that I think are really, really important to figure out if somebody's really good? Matt, any guess on what two is?
Well, I knew that. No, that's Luke's favorite number.
This isn't Sesame Street.
But there's my feeling about analytics right there.
But tell me the importance of the number two in terms of determining who is a really, really good player. Can you do it?
No.
Eyes.
Ah. Ah.
It doesn't take a genius to sit there and go, you know what? That dude's really good. I don't need a stat. He's
very
really
true.
Good.
Yep.
He's really good. That's why I am such... I've done this a long time. I don't need stats to tell me if somebody's really good or a team's really good or bad at something. You can see it. Now, stats can send you in the direction when you're watching videos. And, hey, there's, you know, I'm looking at the stats. They're not really a great defensive team. Okay. Let's watch the tape. All right, now I can see why. They don't cover up here. They don't rotate there. All right, or in football, they're late on the blitz. Or they're not really good at these two positions, and it's killing them. There's a lot of, you know, it gives you hints as to, okay, and then you can see for yourself as to why and why not. If you have any kind of feel for the game, you don't need numbers to back it up. I mean, do you need numbers to back it? I mean, to, It's not a math equation out there. And they're dealing so much in probability. And I go back to this over and over again. Analytics are any tool that you can get your hands on that can help you, use it. But there are many, many ways to win. And on a given day, by the way, analytics is a way to win. There is no question. On a given day, analytics is a way to win. But it's not the only way to win. And that's the problem that you have with in every sport with sabermetrics. Analytics people are so dug in, they think it's the only way to win. And that is just silly. I mean, it's just literally silly. But it is a way to win. It's a way to win. No question. But analytics will tell you, you have to go for it on every single fourth down. Analytics will tell you, you need to go for a two-point conversion every single time. Analytics will tell you, you've got to take Max Scherzer out when he faces the third time through the order, even if Max is throwing a no-hitter. Even if Max is throwing a perfect game, analytics says he's got to come out. Really? Wow. My two eyes tell me they can't hit him today. I'm going to send him out one more time. And if he keeps doing it, I'm going to send him out again. See what I'm saying? Hey. Recognize it is a way to win. Recognize it is not the only way to win. Like, for example, say you're a 6'8" power hitter who wants $500 billion in salary. Showing up for more than one playoff game in a given year probably would help your cause more. Just me. No? Bad? Shouldn't have brought that up.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
You get frustrated when you go home every day, don't you? All right. We'll come back with more in a moment. We got Heath Bell, former closer, who was way better than Mariano Rivera in his prime. Way better. They weren't even close. No? You're not buying that?
No good! No good! No good!
If this were a ship, you would be Ensign Bitter. All right, well, and then Reginald Walker here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Q, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Fabulous service department, whether it happens to be inspections or routine or diagnostics, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So, this is an educational show. We've learned today that Luke Cotrillo's favorite number is 2.
That's correct.
That's what, because that's the average number of runs the Yankees score per game? Or
hey, they're outscoring Toronto right now, 4-3 in this series. I didn't think that was going to happen. Now, 4 runs in 2 games is not great, but hey, we'll take it.
And 4 runs in 2 games is an average of what?
Yeah, I walked right into that one, I know.
No, no. If you could answer it for the audience, that'd be great.
That'd be two.
Why do you always doubt me? very quickly, the Pirates won today. They beat the Cubs 6-2. We're going to talk to Heath Bell, by the way, in a few moments about pitching. Pirates beat the Cubs 6-2.
Oh, my almighty!
The Nationals beat the Braves 3-1. Guardians lead the Reds 6-1 top of the seventh. Top of the sixth, the Mets lead the Phillies 5-1. And the Red Sox in the top of the seventh now lead the Tigers 9-2. And in the series against Toronto, the Yankees are averaging how many runs per game?
That would be two.
That's Luke's favorite number. Wow, that's neat. All right, so. You're kind of angry right now, aren't you?
I can promise you they didn't do it just for him. Because I would have objected to that.
You're kind of angry right now. You're mad at yourself. Feel like you stepped into it.
Yeah, I kind of am, actually.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk some baseball. Heath Bell, former closer with the San Diego Padres, among other teams, joins us. Great to have you with us. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I always tell people that in today's game that every team is searching for the 6-8 inning guys, innings 6, 7, and 8, and it's whomever gets lucky ends up doing really well in a particular year. When you hear that statement, what do you think?
What, that everybody's looking for a 6, 7, 8 guy, or just
everybody's looking for them, and then they put together a roster of them, and then you luck out, and a couple guys have really terrific years, and it swings the season for you.
Well, I everybody's looking for those guys. I'm huge on if you have relievers, and if you delegate a guy and say, look, he could be a lefty or righty or whatnot, hey, I want you to be our 7th inning guy. I want you to be our 8th inning guy. And you tell them that, so be ready for this. I almost feel like there'll be better pitchers in the bullpen and stuff instead of going, well, who am I just going to go with the hot hand? If people know their roles, it's almost like if you have a center fielder and a right fielder and a left fielder. If you just told them, hey, you're my outfield, and you just switch them up every game. One goes in center one day, and the next day he's in left, the next day he's right. They'll be good outfielders, but they're not going to be great outfielders. So I think in today's game, everybody's looking for those middle guys, but everybody just kind of throws whoever's hot out there, and they don't delegate it. And the teams that delegate it are the teams that have success and do very well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because when I look back at the 2015 Kansas City Royals, okay, when they won it, they had a 7th inning guy, they had an 8th inning guy, and they had a closer. I think Herrera was the 7th inning guy. I think Davis was the 8th inning guy, and I can't remember who the closer was. My apologies. I'll get through someday. I think it's great that I remembered it. But they had defined roles, and I think you're absolutely right. That's how it works.
Yeah. So here, I'll give you an example. So I came to San Diego in 07, and they had Clay Meredith as a 7th inning guy. They had 8th inning guy, as in Scott Linebrink, and then Trevor Hoffman, the closer. And they told me, we have, we kind of need like that bridge. We kind of see you as a 6th inning guy. And I said, okay, but there's going to be times that our 7th inning guy is down, and we're going to have to, you pitch the 7th because he's pitched too many days in a row, vice versa. And then, you know, if both of them are down, we might need you to pitch the 8th inning. And then if all three of our horses are down, you might have to pitch the 9th inning, closing. And so what I'm trying to tell you is, as me, when I first got there, I was a 6th inning guy. And I did really well, but when Clay Meredith was our 7th inning guy, and he was struggling or whatnot, I wanted to step into that role, not to take the role from him, just to help him out. Like, I wanted the team to win, and when Clay, because he's our guy, when he comes back and, like, you know, maybe he's leaving pitches up or mechanically he's doing something funky, when he gets his rhythm back, I'll take a step back and he'll step in front of us, you know, and then is one of those things. I kind of moved up the ladder, and it was the same way when they traded. We traded for Scott Linebrink to the Brewers that year because we needed a left-handed Joe Thatcher, I think it was, and we got our left-handed reliever because we didn't have any lefties in our bullpen. And I became the eighth inning guy, and everybody's like, "You're going to take over as closer." Well, that year I had no intention. I wasn't thinking that. All I was thinking was if Trevor's down, and I did get a few saves that year to help the team out, but that's his role. That's his, you know, we're all defined as roles here. And even when there's other guys that we were all like, I was shut down because we pitched so many days or whatnot, other guys would step into our role and just bridge that gap, you know, because we had the day off or whatnot, and then come back. It wasn't a competition like, I'm going to do better, and then I'll be the eighth inning guy. You know, it was everybody had their defined roles, and everybody helped each other out. And the bullpen's a different breed. It's like a big family down there. So we don't allow anybody in the bullpen unless you're cool. They're not allowed to come. But because we have a tight-knit family down there. But when you have a tight-knit family, and I've been part of bullpens with tight-knit and bullpens that everybody's just looking out for themselves, the tight-knit families always did better as a group and as a team than the individual guys, even if we had, you know, guys that throw hard and were studs. So, yeah, I believe kind of like what you're saying. If you can define and say, you're my seven, you're my eight, you're my nine, and then you're my mop-up guy, you're my sixth inning, and you're a guy that's helping these other guys out, everybody will be like, okay, I'm good. Let's go. Let's go win.
And you had 132 saves in a three-year span. With San Diego and three All-Star appearances because of it. You talk about the tight-knit family. What did the tight-knit family in front of you when you were the closer mean?
Everybody was on the same page. Everybody's trying to help each other out. Nobody's in competition of each other. You know, nobody's trying to take roles from each other. Everybody's going out there and trying to help each other out. Because I'll give you an example. If you bring your eighth-inning guy in or your closer in the game, all seven guys on playing defense is excited. Besides the fans, they're almost like, dude, we're going to win this game. We got this game.
Yep.
But when you bring a guy in that maybe some outfielders don't, they're like, oh, why are we bringing this guy in? Yeah. You know?
Right.
Then I don't believe – I think they always try 100%. You know, I don't think anybody really dogs it that I can tell. But it just seems like they don't get to those balls that – you know, it's kind of like when I was closing in San Diego – and a ball was hit, I felt like the outfielder would always catch it. And then some guys would come in and, you know, we're up by like, say, 4 or 5 runs, mm-hmm. you know, somewhat close, but not, we're still winning. So they'd put somebody else out there. It just seemed like our outfield didn't get those balls. You know, I think they were still trying, but when you just know, like, you feel like, oh, we got this, you'll make that amazing diving catch in the outfield or infield. You'll make that great throw right on point. But when you're like, oh, man, I don't know why he's pitching. Then all of a sudden, mentally, you're just kind of like, oh, man. And then maybe you try to do too much or you're not. So, yeah, I'm big on defining roles. Today's game, how analytics, you know, well, this guy throws a great slider and this guy can't hit sliders. I don't know about that. This guy rotation hits 3 million and this guy can only hit 200,000 rotations. I don't know. whatever happened to this guy's, it's his birthday today. I'm going to play him because you always get hits or do great things on your birthday.
That's an analytic.
Yeah.
Just take the date.
You talk
today.
To any old player from the 80s, like early, like 90s or before, really. Anybody with a birthday, we're starting you. You know, you're starting on the mound, you're starting in the field, it doesn't matter where. Somehow you did something good.
Yeah, usually in a good game. Yeah.
Yeah.
the thing. They also say today, based on analytics, that if I need a couple of outs and I can win the game, you know, or at least I perceive I can win the game in the seventh inning, I'll bring my closer in there. Now, obviously, players have to adapt to that. But when you hear that, what do you think?
I think you're not defining roles, and I think here's the thing. Put your best pitcher in, you're my seventh inning guy.
Yep.
Because how do you know the seventh inning is this? How do you know the eighth inning? How do you know your defense is going to be there?
Right.
You know, sometimes the defense is not there in the ninth inning. I just think you define roles. And, I mean, let me put it this way. In San Diego, when Clay Meredith was a sidewinder, he probably could have closed games. Trevor Hoffman definitely could have closed games.
Right.
Scott Linebrink originally, when he came over in San Diego like 4 or 5 years before me, he was supposed to take over for Trevor Hoffman. He could probably close. And then I ended up closing, and everybody said I could probably close. So you had like four closers there, but you defined the roles. And that's what made us so unique in that bullpen in that stretch for a couple of years, is we had roles. We could have all been closers. I mean, when I was closing, Mike Adams was my setup guy. He closed for the Texas Rangers a few years later.
That's right.
We had Ernie Niesto. I'm going to say that wrong because I say Latin guys' names wrong all the time. Right. I can't roll my R's. But Fiesta, he closed for the Angels for a couple of years. And he was our seventh inning guy. So it's one of those things, if you just have to find guys that can close games, and then you define, you're my seventh, you're my eighth, you're my ninth, let's go.
What does it mean to mental preparation on a daily basis when you do know what your role is?
Well, in the bullpen, in the fifth inning, I started imagining and mental preparing myself and stretching physically, but mental preparing myself, who is going to be up in the ninth inning.
Right.
And then if nobody gave up a hit, and if somebody gave up a hit, then I would redo it. And then I'd kind of picture in my head who was going to, you know, if I was going to face this guy, how would I face him in this situation? How would I face this guy in this situation every inning, from the sixth inning, seventh inning, even the eighth inning? And then go out there like I already did it mentally in my head. And when you're the sixth inning guy, you start doing it in the fourth inning, you know, third or fourth. When you're the seventh, you kind of do it in the fourth or fifth. And everybody does that. And you're all – it's funny because when I said the bullpen's a family, roughly the first three innings, everybody's joking around, having a good time, having fun. And then about the end of the third, you start seeing everybody start getting quiet. Everybody's focusing on the game more, what they have to do, what their role is. We're all predicting – hey, it's going to probably be this guy. It's going to be that guy coming in because we have all our roles. And there wasn't too much of a shock, like, what, it's me pitching or he's going in this game? You know, and we're all like, let's go, get ready. This is going to be your time, you know, this and that, and everybody's preparing. And if you have a question like, hey, how do you face this guy? Or, you know, my slider's not good today. Is there a chance I can throw something else? You know, what do you get this guy out on, Heath? Or Mike, what do you get this guy out? We would talk to each other, and I think everybody wants everybody to do so well, and we're not in competition of each other. We just want to win the game and help the starter, you know, win that game and help the team win, and we're all just trying to help each other out, have great years, and at the end of the year, we'll look back and look at our numbers. So mental preparation is really key, but it's also, I think it's very important when you have your roles, then you can mentally prepare yourself for what you need to do. If I was a closer, and all of a sudden they call in the sixth inning and go, hey, we need you now. Okay, well, I didn't mentally prepare. Now I just got to go out there and physically do what you're asking me to do without my preparation.
So. All right. How many pitches did it usually take for you to warm up when you were the closer? I mean, you knew what your role is going to be, so how many pitches did it usually take?
In college, I learned how to get ready in 10 pitches.
Oh, good.
And I'll tell you this, and they taught me how to do this in college. They said you get eight on the field. Well, now there's a time clock, so you got to be quick.
Right.
But you had eight on the field. And right around the eighth or ninth pitch, you could say, hey, I'm ready. You're going to get 3 to 5 pitches. By the time the coach calls, the other coach picks up the phone, or you relay the hat signals. And then you might have 1 or 2 pitches after that while the coach walks out there slow. So you'll end up, you say you're ready in 10 pitches, but you really end up throwing like 22 pitches,
yeah,
you know, after warm-ups. So
okay,
you have enough. But then I was also taught everything, and we all were taught this, but we forget about it. Every pitch is like a fastball, your curveball, your changeup, mm-hmm, your slider, split, it doesn't matter. So if you can get your fastball going exactly where you want it, like locate it, then it's just a different grip. If you take that mental aspect, there you go. You just have the different grip, and you throw it like a fastball. So if you got your fastball working, everything else should fall in line.
Same arm slot, different grip.
Yep, all it is a different grip. Nothing's different except for the grip.
Yeah.
And I was preached that in college, and I took that the rest of my career.
When you look at the analytics of today's game, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it?
I don't like how it's like matchup. Every single, you know, person is matching up against matchup. You know, I think the integrity of the game has kind of disappeared a little bit. There's not a game. It's more of like, you know, I wouldn't even say a chess match, because a chess match can be fun too. You know, it's like, go back to World Series 2 years ago when Snell was dealing.
Yeah, they took him out.
They took him out because analytics said Mookie Betts' third time hits better off Snell, but also Snell struck him out twice, his first two at-bats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, analytics, reporting to analytics, there should never be a no-hitter or never a perfect game in this right. in the rest of the baseball, because right. analytics says no. Whatever happened to the manager, I got a gut feeling this guy's going to hit. Mm-hmm. I just got a gut feeling this guy's going to do it. Analytics, and this is what I hear, I don't know, I kind of know, but I'm not going to tell you exactly to be fact, but I've heard from high sources, the managers don't even make lineups anymore.
Yeah,
it's a bunch of young computer guys
mm-hmm. yep.
that don't know, they've never played the game,
mm-hmm.
don't know how hard it is to play a game, don't know the strategies, don't know that it's hard being out there every single day. Mentally, you have to prepare yourself. But when you're comfortable every day hitting in the third spot, or doing this or that, or you're like, you know what, last time, like Manny Ramirez used to do this all the time, I'm going to swing and miss on your curveball because next time I face you, like, nobody's on base. Next time somebody's going to be on base, then I'm going to crush your curveball. But yeah. I'm going to do it thinking that I'm going to get out. So if a hitter mm-hmm. gets out on a slider or a fastball, whatever, he goes next to bat, or next time I face him, you know, in a month, I'm going to be ready for that pitch, because he's done that the last two times to me. Well, analytics says, no, you're horrible at this pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I gotcha.
People, it's not baseball guys making decisions. That's what I don't like, right. Banner. What do I like about analytics? It's cool to see how hard guys hit the ball.
Yeah. I tell the people that. I've said all the same things you have, because to me, in doing this for a long time, and I do football, baseball, and basketball as my primary three,
gotcha.
There are multiple ways to win. Analytics happens to be one of them. And
exactly.
And the problem I've had with sabermetrics people is they mm-hmm. think it's the only way to win. And
exactly.
And you and I know there are multiple ways to do it.
Yeah, so I guess I'm going to plug myself, but I started a podcast like a couple weeks ago, and I talk about the Padres mostly, but baseball. And the thing is I talk about like pitching, and I know pitching, and a lot of people know pitching. And like I just said, everything leads off the fastball. I feel like analytics is like your curveball. It's like your changeup. You just can't keep throwing a changeup all the time.
Right.
But if you have a fastball and you use the changeup as an analytics, like your secondary pitch, you'll be that much better as a pitcher. Just exactly what you're saying. There's other ways of getting people out. It's just not this one way of getting people out. Like my last couple of years, analytics started being in baseball.
Yeah.
And all the scouting reports, this is how you pitch to him. And and the analytics people would tell me that. And it was early, and it wasn't as good as it is now. And my question was, how do you get the hitter out? Well, this is how you pitch to him. How do you get him out? I want to get him out. Tell me that. They had no answer for me. This is how you pitch to them. Okay. So
I always say the same thing over and over again. I've actually been to the campus of MIT. They have no national championship banners. All right. So we'll leave it at that. I can't wait to get you back on the show. It was a lot of fun.
No, thanks for having me. If you get a chance, listen to my new podcast. I probably have about 2 followers right now. It's called Ring the Bell.
Perfect.
Mostly about the Padres, but I talk about baseball a lot. I'm a big baseball nut. So anyway, I love the history of baseball. It's great. I love to see baseball back, and we're not striking. It's awesome.
Exactly. And after being on this show, we'll go from 2 podcast listeners to 4. Perfect.
Yeah. That's great.
See, that's
double my rating.
That's the impact I have. All right.
That a boy. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Heath. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you soon.
Heath Bell, who, by the way, texted me and he said the Yankees were averaging 2 runs a game. All right, whatever.
Good to know.
Not the only one. But fortunately, it's Luke's favorite number. It must have been devastating when Jalen Hurts switched to 1.
We didn't know what the number 2 was yet, so it's okay.
I have all sorts of jokes there. I'm going to stay away from them. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.